in a greedy little world that teaches every little boy and girl to earn as much as they can possibly, then turn around and spend it foolishly. We created us a credit card mess. We spend the money that we don't possess. Our religion is to go and blow it all. So it's shopping every Sunday at the mall. All we ever want is more, a lot more than we had before. So take me to
good afternoon, everybody. This is James Martinez. Welcome back for another edition of Cashflow. Hope everybody is having a good time assimilating all the information that we're putting together here. I'm going to be shortly putting, shall we say, notations on some of the archives that are going up, because I know a lot of them, I know they're all currently dated. They don't have any particular address on them. So when you go back and review, you don't know which exactly what topic or what the subject matter was for that day or who was the guest or whatever. So what I'm going to do is I will entitle some of those. And I'm also going to, if you're emailing me back and forth and you need further education or a different perspective on what's going on, you can always, I can always just say refer to such and such a date and you will see the title in reference to that particular archive, and you can listen to it over and over again or pass it on or whatever to your friends or associates, families, colleagues, whatever, so you get a better understanding of what's going on here. So today, again, I'm very happy to have Bob Neverett back on the air after he's been gone with some work issues, which I'm sure we might be getting into a little bit here. And also, I want to remind everybody, please, if you would, if you're calling the 888 number that you hear in the commercial or that's been referred to you, the 888-213-7655 number. Please make sure you leave your telephone number and email address if you have one. And I can make sure that I follow up to both forms there, your telephone and your email address, to make sure that you got all your questions answered or the information that you do need. So without further ado, I know we have Bob here on hold. Bob, welcome back. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, James. Good to be back. And the press conference continues.
Yes, exactly. Okay, I'm sure you've got some updates for us after you've been MIA. So what's the latest?
Well, personally, I have no interest in the election. But since it's coming up next week, it's like the Beijing Olympics or the conventions. It's a big media storm, so we have to react to it if necessary. Now, I have no interest in it, but if I'm asked a question about it, I'll give an instant pattern. And before you ask me anything you want to talk about it, I have this pattern. I've been waiting to talk about this for a month or two. Time Magazine had a column August 25th, 2 months ago, by a guy named Lev Grossman. It's called The Offline American. Then it says, subtitled, McCain admits he's a net newbie, but does that affect whether he should be president? Now, according to our press conference and your credit crusade, it's better not to be online or in the credit world. Be off it, right?
Right.
Right. And we also, we know that it, since the internet and the net and the chip landscape is part of our bodies, it's hard to disconnect it, but we are advocating a detached view towards it and how to not be upset by it.
Right.
So if McCain is the offline American, then according to our party line, he'd be our candidate. So let's go into this, all right, what the article says, and see if that is the right response to what he's being presented as here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
So
this writer is Lev Grossman. His column is called Nerd World. He says, it's hard to tell exactly how much or how little John McCain knows about the internet. In January, that'd be 2008, he spoke to Politico.com about his computing habits. He said, I am an illiterate that has to rely on my wife for all of the assistance that I can get, unquote. Then in July, he confessed to the New York Times that he has people surf the web for him. He said, I don't email. I've never felt a particular need to email. Now, remember, I've been saying that since 2000, we've been actually post-chip landscape in the caveman world of non-information, non-communication, and the presidential image of George Bush resonated with that perfectly.
Right.
He was not receiving any information, not giving out any information. And anything he did communicate was not a lie, was not the truth, it just was, right?
Right.
And of course, that confused the TV landscapes and ship landscapes. the column continues, since then, his staff has done some backpedaling on the subject, but it's pretty clear that McCain is not elite, which means elite in hacker parlance. On the grand scale of wired politicians, he's probably somewhere between recently indicted Alaska Senator Ted Stevens, and he was just found guilty yesterday, I noticed, who famously described the Internet as a, quote, series of tubes, and our current president, who once proudly explained to CNBC's Maria Bartiromo how he uses the Google, that's what he called it, the Google, okay?
Right.
In brackets, it says, as for Obama, he's well known to be a BlackBerry addict. Now, according to our party line here, then he needs our services, right? If he's
right.
a BlackBerry addict. So the columnist says, what exactly does it mean that the next president of the United States might be a newbie? And then it goes into McCain as an example of what, under the Clinton administration, used to be called the digital divide. Back then, it was the cause of much gnashing of political teeth. In his 2000 State of the Union address, Clinton announced a national crusade, in quotes, national crusade, to take the Internet to those who didn't have it. That year, 41% of the Americans were online, according to U.S. Census numbers. This past May, a survey by the research firm Parks Associates found that 82% are. The offline American has gone from a disenfranchised minority to an endangered species. Then it says, but the great cyber crusade hasn't reached McCain. We could just shrug and assume that McCain at 71 is typical of his age group, but that's actually not the case. While it's true, according to the Pew Internet and American Life Project, that only 35% of Americans over the age of 65 are online, if you look at the subset for McCain's race, gender, and education, the number is more like 75%. McCain is way behind. Does this mean he shouldn't be president? On a practical level, it's a non-issue. If President McCain needs to watch the new Rihanna video on YouTube, he can wave his little finger and 8 Secret Service guys will hook him up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it gets into the interesting part. What's more worrying is the idea that McCain is disconnected from the social, cultural, and economic realities of the Internet, what we call your chip body, right?
Right, right, exactly.
Our chip body. Now, I would say that one cannot be disconnected from it because you're in an environment where everybody else is, so those people are affecting you, as you commonly complain. Everybody running around in L.A. or near you is driving you up the wall because they can't even look at you.
Right.
And you can't even get their attention.
Exactly.
While you're on the phone, too, you know, under the same duress.
Right. Exactly.
He's not really disconnected, but in the theme of this article, he's saying that McCain is disconnected from the social, cultural, and economic realities of the Internet. We are way past the point where we can treat the Internet as if it were some kind of nerd Narnia. Wasn't that a movie, Narnia?
Narnia, yeah. That was animation, yes.
Okay, we're some kind of nerd Narnia, only tangentially connected to the real world. In the next few years, the president is going to have to make decisions about Internet surveillance. You've had Marty Kaiser on about that. Net
yep.
neutrality, cyber warfare, which after years as an urban myth has become quite real. You're the expert on the cyber credit warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And online privacy, just to name a few issues. And more than that, the structure of a network world is hard to understand if you haven't spent some time as a node in that network. Now, this is interesting. You then list the characteristics of the chip landscape. The centerlessness, the irrelevance of geography, the propagation of information, the Friedmanian economic flatness, the semi-anonymous contacts with millions of other people. If you can't grasp that structure, how can you lead the people who live and work in it? So what's interesting is that when people are admitting that there is a cyber landscape, and they've probably been saying that for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
that's what we call a figure, and the hidden ground is not noticed. And the hidden ground is we're post-chip landscape. But this guy, talking about the average citizen in the concentration camp called America, is subject to these issues, but doesn't think about it, doesn't relate it to the fact of the irrelevance of geography. Well, how can you be an American, right, if geography
right, exactly.
is irrelevant?
Yeah, good point.
Or Canadian or Pakistani or anything. If there's a bright side, then he says, how can you lead the people who live and work in it? Then he ends the column saying, if there's a bright side to McCain's Internet illiteracy, it's that at this point, most of the rest of us are trying to figure out how to send less email, not more. See? Intuiting the post-information environment.
Mm-hmm.
The Internet, conceived as a research and productivity tool, has become a weapon of mass distraction. Last year, a joint study by Microsoft and the University of Illinois found it takes, on average, 16 minutes, 33 seconds for a worker interrupted by an email to get back to what he or she was doing. You're always talking about that.
That's exactly right. That is That's a big point right there. Very interesting.
Yeah. Companies like Intel and Deloitte and Touche now have email-free days to boost productivity. They want to get the chemical body operating
right.
again.
Exactly.
In June, Microsoft, Google, and IBM, among others, formed the Information Overload Research Group to study the problem. Well, that should be listening and talking to us.
Exactly. Thank you very much. I couldn't agree with you more.
Maybe they start doing that in June because they heard us. We were on another network from January. You know,
right.
We went till June.
Hmm?
Okay. It ends with this. Perhaps the Clinton crusade has worked too well. Now we're trying to jump back across the digital divide. Who knows? Maybe McCain will be our most productive president ever. He's so behind the times, he's way ahead of them.
That's interesting. That's an interesting perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's on the right track in reference to what we're talking about in our press conference here. He may not know the causes like I do or how to define it, but he's trying to be a good citizen and get back into his chemical body.
Right.
So does that mean we're going to vote for him? And what would you say, since I think a lot of people are not inclined to vote for him, but if you're going to vote, I don't even know if you're going to vote, but let's say you are, James, who would you vote for once I've laid out that McCain is more aligned to our party line in our press conference than Obama?
Well, I would say that I would answer that by saying it doesn't matter based upon the information that I played yesterday of a clip that went down in Florida about a gentleman that just testified before, I believe it was, I don't know, it was either senators or some kind of official body where he testified yesterday. Or I don't know exactly when the date was done, but I played it yesterday. And it was a gentleman saying he was a computer programmer. This is very important to the link to what you're saying.
Right. His name is James. His name is James somebody, right?
Yes.
I actually heard that on another source of information
yeah,
yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. And
he talked about how he rigged the situation.
That's right. That's right. And I said on there, it doesn't matter who's going to run for president, because if it's rigged, we're never going to know who did it anyway, because the certain code to trigger the vote to go to a certain way and not leave a digital footprint that it was done can be programmed into the voting system, which means there's no democracy, which means you don't really know what happened, so it doesn't really matter what your vote is anyway. So I would say that it doesn't matter.
Exactly, and that's what I mean by a post-information society. You cannot rely on anything that's told you unless you agree to go along with the group that's pretending it's real, which is what people do on Oprah Winfrey or any show.
Exactly.
If you're working on a TV show, your staff, you pretend that it's real what you're doing.
Right, right.
But in relation to reality, it's not, and you're sending to nobody, there's nobody to receive it. So, yes, that's an example of what our press conference is. It's a post-information world. We fully know that our press conference can't be picked up by anybody. And we are still operating like everybody else in this irony and paradox and catch 22.
Yeah, so like, but if not knowing that, I would, if I did not respond in that way, I would say that that McCain is still in Vietnam. He's still tortured. He's still in the war zone. Kind of part of his brain, and I would, despite where he exists in the electoral landscape, it wouldn't matter because this guy's about war, and I don't support that, and I don't support Obama either, because none of what he's saying has any application or any relevance. He's just firing off trigger words and whatnot that get people to react, and it's a big show, and he can't fix any of the economic issues, and he's not even addressed any of them, and he's addressing them in old formats, which are completely obsolete.
Right. So I think it'd be healthy for people who are pretending to receive our press conference, people can hear it, but relating it to their lives and the rest of the world is the difficult part that I'm trying to help them with by being honest and telling them what the facts are. There's no relationship with what we're putting out or with anybody else. There's no relationship of that person to the election. It's all disconnected and doesn't exist. So we're trying to offer a way to deal with that. And so the healthy attitude would be ignore as much as possible any of the information sent to you from headquarters, which is called the TV body or the TV landscape. That's the central part of people's reality. The idea is somebody out there looking after the store. And Obama is running to be that person, the general store manager. But that is not the actual store we live in. So the healthy thing is again, never pay attention to any of this stuff. And if anybody actually presses you in a job interview what you should say about all this, just say cold fusion. That's the agenda.
Which I've been saying repeatedly more and more and more. And I might add that introducing that concept as a way to describe the inevitable collapse of any digital economy and to prepare for a whole new understanding and idea of what wealth is and freedom, cold fusion is the perfect segue.
Right, and that is why I was away last week. You know, I did become, in relation to the M1 money supply, I became the wealthiest person during the collapse a couple of weeks ago, just like a lot of people made a lot of money during the SNL crisis. Well, not a lot of people, but some people made a lot of money. There's a way you can position yourself when everything else is crashing. This spills into your bank account. So
right.
with that wealth, I'm trying to do it responsibly and apply it to a new paradigm shift. And a technical way to do it is through cold fusion. So I would report that everything's going forward and we're on schedule and we're looking at the breakthrough in a year and a half at least. So that's the good news. Now, back to this election, since we have to provide content, here's an interesting pattern. If someone asks me to make a comment on an election that I don't care about, and I think it's healthy to be indifferent to it, my pattern is that there's an incredible amount of racism if implied in the image of Obama if he wins. Because he generates...
Yeah. Yeah.
And here's what the racism is. The world has been told that it's in an economic mess, and it's almost like a 911 catastrophe, a financial catastrophe, and Bush is having a conference, maybe setting up a new Bretton Woods conference on November 14th, supposedly, and that's a whole serious chill and frisson going through the world's audience for the TV landscape that we're in a crisis and what a mess we're in. This is going to take years to fix. So what do we do? We bring in the janitor to sweep up the mess.
Right.
And the culture traditionally, not so much now, but traditionally people know that African Americans, they've known them for the last 50 years as janitors, a lot of them. All right? So the oil cartel, which is making sure Obama wins this election as much as they can, they want to put in this image under the cover that Obama will improve the image of the United States in relation to the rest of the world, the third world, and all the other worlds that have suffered under the Bush era's image. But the thing is, the hidden agenda is he's a janitor. So you can have an African-American sweep up the mess. So isn't that an amazing subliminal racist aspect to this? And
absolutely.
I don't think people are realizing that they are subconsciously, the white population or the non-African-American population, are all for Obama in the polls because he looks like a janitor.
Yeah, it is. It is that racism having to do with this election is so intense. And from all the people I see responding in the L.A. area to the drama, the made-up fictitious drama of the election, it just reminds me of the O.J. trial. Everybody that's black that is not going for Obama is getting persecuted, and the people that are going for Obama that are black are being persecuted because they're doing the same, you know, theory as the OJ trial, where just because they take offense to the fact that the people take offense to the fact that just because they're black, then OJ is innocent, and it's like a racial, all these perceptual problems, and if you're black, why wouldn't you vote for him? And there's all these little groups and discussions and rage, I think it's going to be interesting because we have a black man going, and some of the great things that I've heard and discussed with people out here is that we have a black man going into the presidency, most likely, but it doesn't matter really, going into the White House, not the Black House, and this presidency is walking into the biggest mess of all time, is going to expect it to make quote-unquote change, but the good news is that he may be the most watched president ever, because I don't think anybody in some parts of this country are going to let him get away with anything, period. So there will be no excuses. This guy will be looked at under a microphone, in a little micro glass, and examined and pushed and prodded. And so that may be a good thing.
But what's good about that?
Well, because there's so many racist people in the United States that if we have a black man as president, he's not going to be able to get away with anything criminal at all.
Okay. The thing is that McLuhan once said back in the early 70s, talking about the role of the president of the United States, he says, the automated presidential surrogate is always a superlative nobody. Now, that's a good statement because most of the presidents and most of the politicians are nobodies. And they actually look like fallen angels, creepy and sleazy, because nobody
right.
wants the image of responsibility the job requires. So you have to have someone who's a nobody, has no ego. And that, to me, Obama is a guy who has no ego. And that's what is probably disorienting for people to look at McCain, because he looks like he has an ego. And you're not allowed to have an ego, but you
right.
have to be tough, so it's schizophrenic. And so if you're more of a nobody, you're more appropriate for the image of the White House. And you're saying that he'll be the most scrutinized guy ever. I would say that's not true, because the Android meme is the White House, and the scrutiny of the White House is all that exists. That's why there's never the end to the election. There's always just discussion of, okay, we now have a new president, now then there'll be the honeymoon, and then there'll be always in trouble, and then a year later they talk about the jockeying among the various parties about who will be the next candidate because the president screwed up, right?
Right.
So they never stop talking about the White House, because that's all there is in the economy. So there'll be no more increased scrutiny of him by the electronic Android meme, because it does it to anybody, and all there is the president. But in terms of the chemical body issues and we're white and they're black and all this, those people will be playing their games and providing great media content and new movies, new music, new kinds of styles of entertainment, all responding to the Obama effect, right?
Right.
So it'll keep the economy going.
Absolutely.
Now, I would suggest that if Obama wins, there will be riots. If McCain wins, there'll be riots. So we're going to have
right.
lots of...
Okay, good. We both totally agree on that. Yep.
Yeah. Either way, there's going to be total turbulence from November 5th on, Guy Fawkes Day, right?
Yep.
And V for Vengeance. And that, of course, people say Bush will be able to bring in martial law before they inaugurate Obama. There's that
right.
thing. Now, let's say that no social disturbances happen. Everything goes along and Bush resigns or steps down quietly, properly, according to the protocols, and we move along, and Obama's having a good honeymoon period, and everything is cool, and none of this paranoia that you have on the internet about what's coming next week or tomorrow happens. Will there be other things going on? Yes. There'll be the collapse of the digital landscape, which is what we're living right now. And the collapse of the digital landscape is us becoming aware that a whole economy was built on derivatives in the chip landscape. That was an important That was the only part of the economy, but since it doesn't relate to the Constitution or the Federal Reserve or how anything relates to actual accounting books, we think it's a fake and not real. And that's what Ron Paul ran on and didn't get anywhere, because that's not real. The reality is that the chip landscape is real, but the people have woken up and see it, like that article I just read you in Time magazine describing the lack of geography, the centerlessness. People now know this. It's a cliche. And when it's a cliche pattern, we have moved to somewhere else. And so slightly, McCain's warlike attitude is totally appropriate to the caveman reality we're in. And to
the degree, that's exactly right. Now, we got about 2 minutes before the break, but a listener just sent in this little flash message and said, where does, in capital letters, ACORN fit? Where does the ACORN thing fit in with all of this?
Well, okay, the White House is the only oak tree, the huge tree that all the Android meme revolves around. So any issue is an ACORN. The reason the ACORN issue, that little scandal, became big is that its actual acronymic initials rhyme with the fact that each one of us is an ACORN on one level. In the chip level, on the TV landscape level, we are an acorn around the big tree of the global newsmaker called the White House. So I would say it had the right acronym. That's the only reason it had any resonance. It has no impact on what's going on. So again, I look at the language, not the content.
Oh, I see what you mean.
On any
right.
issue. Acorn. I don't know the particular details. I heard about it. People, rigging voter rolls or things, something like that.
Right.
Yeah. So that is, that becomes an issue from the chemical body point of view. The Democratic columnist like Joe Conation will say, say he writes for the New York Observer, he will say that the Republicans are exaggerating the acorn issue, the Bill Ayers issue, and the Republicans will say that, no, this is an important issue, Obama's a communist, and on they go, which keeps us typing, and it's irrelevant. So I don't know why this person is even mentioning the acorn. They haven't been they haven't been listening to our press conference.
All right, they need to go back and listen to the archives. We're going to take a quick break here. It's James Martinez, special guest Bob Nevert today, October 29th, 2008. We'll be back right after this. Stick around, everybody. This is James Martinez from The Cashflow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
In her ebook and audiobooks, Sacred Journey, Sacred Life, author and respected women's health authority, Reva Dawa, takes the hand of Ellen Stein, whose discovery of breast cancer propels her down a new, albeit scary, path of enlightenment. Written to address the alarming, isolating feelings that women with cancer often have, Sacred Journey, Sacred Life is the essential go-to guide for those seeking a blend of modern and ancient medical practices. This beautiful work is available as an ebook or 6-CD audiobook from Amazon.com or at sacred-journey-books.com. That's sacred-journey-books.com.
This is Gordon Wilson, host of Believing is a Quest, Trust is the Key. I'd like you to join me and my co-host, Rosemary the Messenger, every Thursday night, 7 to 9 Mountain Standard Time. Let us help you make a change in your life. We want to give you the keys to your own life and show you how to drive your life to success and happiness. Believing is the Quest, Trust is the Key on AchieveRadio.com.
Listening to AchieveRadio.com, the positive side of broadcasting.
Alrighty, everybody, James Martinez. We're back with Bob Neffert. Here, a special day after his little trip away from us. Now we're back discussing the acorn issue. Now, do you want to say anything a little bit more about that question with the acorn thing?
No, just that I look at the form of the issue, acorn, an acronym, and I look at the meaning, traditional stereotype of the acorn under the oak tree, and I make a pattern out of it. I'm just providing instant patterns while we wait for people to understand what the real issue is. That's what everybody's providing, cognitive thrills and patterns. And
okay, so here's my question to you. If the issue is it doesn't really matter who's going to be the president because there's not really any real democracy left now, then who and how does policy get made in the future?
Okay, when you say there's no democracy, there is incredible democracy if you mean by people being involved. People having access to information, access to the media landscape. The 20th century has been the most democratic experience for humanity ever happened in terms of everybody being involved on an equal playing field. But how that translates back to the bureaucracies that the Illuminati set up 500 years ago, or the bureaucracies that the Vatican has, and we went through that represented in the Bernanke, Paulson, Bush, Cox, Securities Exchange Chairman issue, right? Their press conference, September 19th.
Right.
It's relating the present fact back to bureaucracies. The problem with the democracy as Americans understand it, the republic democracy, founded in 1789 or 83, whenever it was, late 80s, 1789, I think, when they really got the Constitution, the Federalist Papers laid out, that is the that bureaucracy had to be controlled by an electoral college. And how do we relate the whole incredible involvement of electric media, which naturally makes the whole world become a workforce providing information and typing, how does that relate back to the traditional bureaucratic idea of a bunch of people, one man, one vote, sending representatives to a place? That whole structure is so obsolete, but people, but Americans go through this ritual of celebrating the past by having an election, and then many people say this isn't democratic, and they're apathetic. So only half the population votes. Because the population says, well, somehow that process with the Electoral College and putting in representatives is not relevant to what I experienced. I actually experienced a greater, people are intuiting, a greater involvement. That's what talk radio represents, greater involvement in discussing the issues, and I can say anything, and you got Howard Stern, you get all kinds of shows, and you can, you know, micro-niche whatever you want and what you're interested in, and then you have an audience. That is democracy in terms of participation. But it has nothing to do with the traditional image of bureaucratic, literate democracy. So the conflict of the schizophrenic nature of our lives in terms of these images is what we're, in our press conference, trying to correct, heal, or provide the bigger pattern. And that's the real issue. People don't know why they're apathetic and why they have these conflicts. And that's just with the TV body. There's a sociological law laid out by Elias Canetti, who wrote a book called Crowds and Power. McLuhan developed that to show that whenever a crowd is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, it always feels it's getting smaller, paradoxically. It gets the anxiety level raises. So look at how the whole world, once the TV landscape came in, how everybody was involved in the information environment. Even young people got involved in it and created the children's crusade of the 60s, known as the counterculture and all that. Everybody jumped in. And nothing could get resolved other than the endless typing and arguing about what these images meant. Because you have these huge older media environments that are there and carry on with their own momentum. So then when you have the chip landscape, which gives you even more particular democratic participation, because you can now interact quickly and save messages and return them and haunt people with your blogosphere about what you did and said 2 years ago and replay all that stuff. It's so democratic and so involving. That is what people can't figure out. How to relate that to the idea of being an American, which in the world of the chip landscape, there's no geography, so how can you be an American? So the election is obviously...
Exactly. That's just my point. How long is that understanding going to take place?
I think that what's interesting in this further irony is that if you understand it, like I claim to understand it, I'm just another voice in the noise, so that we don't even need understanding anymore. To operate effectively as a zombie citizen.
Say that again now.
you don't even need to understand what I'm talking about to be an effective, democratically involved person. You just have to have an opinion. An opinion is so irrelevant because that's actually unhealthy. You'll have one opinion and stick to it. You'll become a fanatic, and then you'll end up hanging out with parties, political parties, and wandering around being aggravated that you can't get your particular presidential candidate in power, and all anxiety about it, and probably get cancer because you think your chemical body is the foundation of your situation. No, you forgot that you get other bodies, and most of those bodies are not in the United States.
Exactly. So it creates puts somebody in the search mode to determine what their identity is in relation to everything that's happening to them all at the same time.
Right. The ongoing search for identity or an image of what you are to create a sense of security is the work of the citizen today. Forever agonizing and listening in and tuning in to see where the TV landscape, the centralizing landscape tells you are, and as well as the chip landscape, which is a free-for-all and everybody's on an equal playing field. You can interact with anybody and send an email to anybody and hear from anybody. You have to relate, what is that in relation to her identity? So the reason Oprah is such a powerful show is that she processes the anxiety every day.
Yes.
And it's that involved. She's the president in terms of democracy. She's the one that raises a new issue every day, and everybody worries about it and figures out their relationship and opinion about it, and then that's forgotten the next morning. You turn on Oprah for today's thing. Today's processing of this global laundromat. We're forever sudsing, soaking, and rinsing our image of ourselves. And that is what the economy is. So if the crowd gets bigger and more involved through the chip landscape, and then at the same time feels it's getting smaller, paradoxically, because the identity gets threatened as more people log online and start contributing their blogospheres. You know that most people, they heard about MySpace, they said, oh, I can create my own place. They go on there, and then pretty quickly they realize, well, there's 3 million other people on here, and they immediately get deflated, and then they create their MySpace anyways. Even though they know, and you've heard these people, your neighbor says this, well, I got my MySpace, but nobody looks at it. You know, how do I get any attention? So that is the depressionary aspect, the feeling of being little, as more and more people in the crowd gets bigger. And that can explain why people think that the economy has crashed. The bankers saw so many people, so many day traders, and everybody was there involved in the market was going up to 14,000, and that meant the crowd was getting bigger. At one point, somebody or a meme of some group said, this is too big, we're feeling smaller, we're not participating anymore. And that created the effect. So we can predict always the boom and bust cycle, but it's not based on economic markers or money, gold, credit markers. It's based on the inevitable fact that you bring in new technology, which creates more and more democracy, began with the telegraph, then radio, then TV, then the computer and the satellite, all more and more democratic, then the Android meme, the digital reality, so democratic that means that we're going to get a bigger depression because we'll feel smaller.
Yes. Right. Sorry, everybody, but I think he's pretty much right on here, Bob Neverett. Now, I wanted to let you know of an experience that just took place for me that made me realize something even further, that Facebook is one of the primary receptors for people's time, energy, identity, and so forth, as is MySpace. Both function differently. What I just realized and I just experienced is that your past can find you. Because if there's a daisy chain, which is what Facebook is, the whole premise is that friends actually have to know each other, and if they know each other, it recommends other people that they may know. So what has happened, and I experienced it firsthand, is people that I didn't even know exist that are related to me found me because of Facebook, which never could have happened any other way, not even with a court order. It could never have happened, but it did through electronic media.
Digital media.
Digital media. That's right.
Yeah, electronic media.
And then I brought this up at a dinner table with people, and I said, "Well, you know what happens when you get onto Facebook? I mean, you have to respond to the past because all these old people that you never knew that are not necessarily on MySpace are now on Facebook, and somebody you went with to school with in high school comes up and starts interacting with you, and they're bringing up stuff from the past because they knew you and they haven't seen you for 15, 20 years. That brings up all these weird kind of social patterns that people don't want to deal with. Because I did, I was sitting with somebody talking about this specifically, and she goes, "I can't handle it. I don't want to deal with people from the past. I had enough of this this person in the college, and I don't want to, and now they've contacted me." So it's like it changes this whole soup of communication.
Okay, this is the nub of the issue to help understand Finnegan's Wake, what Joyce presented. He presented this whole situation exactly. But what you, just to clarify, you said people you didn't know get in touch with you. What you mean is people that you weren't, you knew them, saw them in the school, but you didn't weren't friends with them. Right,
right. And now suddenly, because of the electrical environment, you know, this digital thing, I've got people that knew me in sixth grade that are now asking me questions and feel like that since we knew each other at that point that I owe them.
That's
I'm
right.
supposed to respond to them. I am in. Why aren't you responding to my email? All
That's
that
right.
stuff happens too. This guy went nuts at the dinner table when I was talking to him about it, how it screwed up his social life.
Okay, so this means that all times are accessible from the chemical body point of view. Your whole life. You never left grade one because it can come back to you now. So this was what you, when you write a book to present what's happening now, and Joyce did this in the 20s and 30s, he showed all experiences, all history, and the particular hero of the book, all his past and future, all happening at the same time, so that when it was very hard to read it because it's all mixed up, grammatically incorrect, but he's trying to show you that all times happen. If that happens, if that's going on, then you can't measure time, therefore you're at best 1 year old. And you are a million years old at the same time. So it's totally contradictory, and an image can't be developed for describing what you're experiencing and where we are in the electric age. Now, this began with the radio experience, the TV, but when the instant replay came in and then the digital recall of anything, which you have here, yes, you are living in all times. That's the amazing thing. You have no identity.
That's right.
Now, when now people say we're getting dumbed down. No, it's not getting dumbed down. When the whole world is there and they can bring up anything of your past and somebody you didn't know but saw you, you know, steal a candy bar in grade 8 and happen to just see it and brings it up now 50 years later, that means it's there to haunt you. The Akashic records are all time are happening. What do you do in that situation? You put on a non-committal opinion. You don't stir it, rock the boat, since everything is going to attack you at any moment, any part of your past. Then you become what's called a zombie, a corporate lackey. You just go around, do your job, look busy, and
right.
So that is a psychological protective mechanism, a shield to the fact that you are bigger than any corporation and bigger than time and space, and all of that can come and bug you or enhance you. So do you see why people naturally turn their chemical bodies into a conforming zombie-like activity? It's not because they're dumbed down, it's because they're smarter in terms of we have so much access to information and we're so interconnected that anybody could show up.
That's right. I mean, the days of letting go of your past over. Basically.
Yes, Krishnamurti, Jiddu Krishnamurti, the great New Age guru who recommend people drop the haunting memories of the past and live in the moment. The whole ideology that Gary Noddle and Alan Watts and all these people say, live in the moment, is totally ridiculous. It doesn't make you more aware. Living in the moment is be a paranoid zombie and hope that none of reality catches up to you in terms of this information past. And so that's why we call it the Age of Terror. Terrorism is not projected by a bunch of chemical bodies known as Al-Qaeda. Terror is the effect of the chip body, and your high school lover shows up any day and demands some reconnection. That's terrifying, as your friend expressed. That's the real effect of our situation. The crowd gets so big, and you're in touch with so many people in all parts of your past, that you begin to feel paranoid, and you could call it smaller. You become frightened.
Yeah, it's that article that you mentioned, it's the amount of time and effort that people put into their digital identity. I at a dinner party, I was just asking random questions to these people, and some people spend an hour, hour and a half, sometimes longer, 2 hours a day minimum, just in front of their computer, answering emails, fixing the machine if it's screwed up.
Yeah.
Updating their pages, checking to make sure their computer wasn't hacked, making sure that their bank account was not hacked, making sure they have the latest information, making sure that their computer is updated with the correct software so it doesn't blow up in front of them.
Wondering whether they should answer that email from that strange person from high school.
Right. Exactly. And then getting a forwarded mail with 10,000 other people saying you must read this, and when you read it, if you don't pass it on, you're going to have bad luck, and all these weird things that occur.
Well, McLuhan, in his book Understanding Media, said the daily work today, this is back in the early 60s, 40 years ago, he wrote that the work today is, as a citizen, is to process information. That has become so hyper that actually the economy can collapse and all this other crap can happen. And somebody could bomb the World Trade Center and nuke it and then claim some Saudi terrorist did it. And then there's a whole micro Alex Jones industry about how we don't have the 911 truth. You know, all these things can happen. But what are people doing? They're living in the present and they're processing what you just said. That is where people live. That is their weather. That's the global warming or the global cooling, the global hyperness. That is what we are. And nothing else approximates that. That is our main job.
Yeah, to process information from all over the place at every moment. And what I'm seeing now is it's gotten so bad now that environments where people walk into, public environments where there's other people in groups, the computers are now creating kind of fashionable faux pas or fashionable creates fashion, but it also creates cultural faux pas, etiquette issues. I mean, LA is the only place where you go into the movie theater. They have to instruct you to shut off all your phones and electronic media, and nobody follows it. And then the directors and producers are spending millions of dollars making unique commercials before the movie actually starts, saying how stupid you are for interrupting their patterns when your pattern that you're running with your computer that you have on you is more important than what you just paid for to see in the movie, and you ruin everybody else's pattern as well.
Right. So the economy is not run on exchange value or symbolic exchange value or use value. It's run on abuse value. We're abusing each other. We're all terrorists. We're all creating panic. I might send an email. I send out a bulk email occasionally about something I think is important, like maybe even the replay of our show. I know that I'm invading people, and I have to sort of psychically say, well, I'm putting a little pinch in their life, but they're sending me stuff, so I'll send it to them. But you're dealing with this, you could say, psychological, spiritual anxiety about how much do I be an invader in other people's realities. But you usually have to give up and send it out anyways, hope that they'll just delete it if they're bothered by it. So that is what people are thinking about. That's the only issue that any president should address, is the psychological pain of the latest new weather and the new environment we're living in. That's what this press conference addresses. But it's abuse value.
Abuse value.
Yeah,
abusing ourselves and each other.
Yes, and the images we create, like the latest victim and proving of abuse value is Madonna. She now has to go through the humiliation to the degree she cares about her divorce, right?
Right.
And all the stuff that the guy says about her. This goes on day in and day out about everybody constantly. And when you have someone from high school email you, that brings up a whole bunch of issues on a tiny micro scale of your chemical body life that Madonna goes through on a macro level in the TV landscape. It's the same irritation. No wonder so what do we do? We fall back on being a psychiatrist or an economist or a doctor or a plumber. We do all the old specialist obsolete activities as a relief mechanism. That's why people love working and love jobs and don't do anything else. They don't have sex with anybody. They just stay in their role. They retrieve the past, which creates security and keeps the economy going. So we need someone from the past to be the president. We do not need someone who wants change.
We don't want change.
That's right. We don't want change. And so definitely we support a guy. The poll support, the Android meme, which we all are part of, supports a guy who sells change and advocates change, but we know he's just a janitor. We're going to act out that stereotype image, and it's going to clean up what's already been changed. So the incorrect use of language, which in our press conference we're trying to grammatically present the way to talk about this situation, The degree, it said erroneously, creates wealth, and don't be disillusioned that Obama's wrong or McCain's wrong. They're meant to be wrong, or they wouldn't be in there to suffer the abuse value that the economy, doing the past, being a psychiatrist whose categories don't apply to anything going on, being an economist whose categories don't apply, or any other disciplines,
right.
Experts, none of it, on the surface, no, on the deep level, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't relate. I'm describing the psychiatric, sociological, medical, vitamin, nutritional way to understand and be stable. But I recognize that people can't really handle this whole situation, so they fall back on the wrong answers, which turns out to be the stability generator, even though the present environment sneaks up on you and gives you cancer, younger and younger.
Right.
So I'm trying to show...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you...
I was about to say that because I keep seeing these new generations of phones coming out and everybody's lining up for that, and I'm seeing what the phone is doing and so forth. And I'm also seeing that the issue of actual votes is becoming an issue. It's like there's no – it's like if people understood what was happening – there's no such thing as leadership anymore, and not in the typical sense of everybody saying, okay, this group of people, 80% of them want this guy and 20% want this guy, so we're going to go with 80%. That nobody will ever be able to tell anything. And also, now living today, you're not allowed to make mistakes, because anything mistake that you do make, whether it's financial or personal, it's left a digital mark to it forever.
Okay.
So you're screwed either way.
You're screwed either way, and the point is, though, the way you get poise in relation to this is you know that none of it has any staying power. Manana knows that there'll be a flack for a while about her, but she'll move on and have a new life. It doesn't matter. No one's going to remember her in 3 weeks when other issues, when someone else has crashed up. So if you know that you don't exist and that's the best way you can – that's good, and they can bug you as long as you answer your email – understand that they aren't getting to you. That person is under the same pressure. There is nothing going on. This is the solution. There's nothing going on, and the more you understand it, you can be that has no consequences of nothing going on, and that everything that is presented to be going on makes the economy happen, keeps the welfare check coming to you, keeps the credit card coming to you, even though you screwed up your credit, keeps everything supporting you. Then on the level you think you're needed, supported by a bigger environment outside yourself, everything's okay. But personally, you are getting sicker, you are getting worse, and you better find out how to deal with this stuff through the proper supplements and not eating the crap food. You're living in a poisonous environment that you need on the chemical body level to feel stable, but on the chip body, TV body level, you better realize there's other things you got to do. That's the yoga, that's the stress on people. The solution is right there beside the problem, but you got to figure out how to see it and sort it out.
Right.
Of our press conference is always to discount everything that's going on that everybody thinks is important, but that's only one quarter of the issues. You got the
right.
Other three bodies.
It's become increasingly difficult for me to address these financial issues with people and get them to explain to they're going to have to be aware of their own awareness, and they're going to have to do things in a different way while still living in the Android meme, and it creates a whole nother school needs to be thought out. Like, this press conference needs to be heard by millions once a week, and then it needs to be discussed and then debated and so forth, and then something's got to be done, because as I've seen this
And what you're saying is that most people will not survive under this, what we're
no, describing. Hell no. They're not going to make it. It's just too much difficulty. It's too much maintenance. There's too much unpredictability. There's too much lying. Anything can be faked. Any relationship can be destroyed. Any honorable credibility between two people, if done so, can be destroyed in the Android meme on websites. I just got asked to consult on a case where a guy decided to use the Android meme and slander somebody and put their pictures up on the web and hide the code and can't find what the person is doing. So, which means anybody can do that, which means your reputation, a person's reputation is not safe ever.
Right. So you have to realize it's not an issue to have a reputation anymore.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And if you actually can get into the TV landscape like that woman we talked about a few months ago, create all the scandal in New York City and the social gossip world, she got a career out of it. The more they smear you, the better it is for you in terms of juggling your TV body and getting some money.
Exactly. So if you can, everybody, go out and make a rap record. go and rob a liquor store and do some stuff out there, you will be forgiven. You can still have a career.
Yeah, you'll keep the economy going. You'll be helping us.
Right, exactly. All right, so this is another episode of Cashflow here with James Martinez. My special guest, Bob Nevert, will return next Wednesday. Thank you very, very much, everybody, for tuning in. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at getdebtreliefnow@gmail.com. And if you have the questions for Bob, I'll make sure that he gets them and responds either on air or via email. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow with my special guest, Andy Gauss, talking to you about the Federal Reserve. And we will talk to you all again. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Is there a time for cold lipstick? A time for cutting hair? Is there a time for high street shopping? To find the right dress to wear? Here she comes. Heads turn around. Here she comes.
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from The Cashflow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
Listening to AchieveRadio.com, the positive side of broadcasting.